He is truly an everyman. He kind of tricks us, even though we know it's Tom Cruise, he tricks us into allowing us to believe that he's an everyman. And then once he escalates and escalates and escalates, so you just watch it and you're like, this is excellent.
You're listening to the Brightwall Darkroom podcast, where we belly up with critics, artists, and our magazine's contributors to speak from the heart about film. I'm Veronica Fitzpatrick.
And I'm Chad Perman.
Chad, happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. It's that time of year again.
I know. My favorite.
Deck the halls.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah. I also haven't seen or talked with you in a while, so it's good to see you again.
I know. It's been a hot minute because of the me and Fran impersonating you.
It was such a great listen, though.
Oh, thank you.
It's always the one episode each year. I'm like, I get to be surprised like everybody else when it comes out. Very good chat on movies that I mostly still haven't seen yet, but
yeah,
was happy to hear all about and talk with you once I finally see them in 5 to 6 years.
Well, it's kind of nice that like as timely as that episode seems like it is for at least me and I guess also for Fran, a lot of those movies aren't coming out for most people for months and months. So it is the kind of thing that if I weren't making it myself, I would probably revisit later and be like, what did they say about May, December? You know?
Well, that's the one that I have seen of all the ones you guys talked about.
And it's the one that I've seen since we recorded. So
wow, that's a good movie.
Wow, that's a good movie. Yeah, cosign.
Yeah.
Cosign.
Pull quote.
Totally.
I hope they use that in the campaign.
Charles Melton, performance of
the year. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And I'm not a Riverdale guy, so that was the first time I'd ever seen him. And
I am also not a Riverdale guy. And I can't believe how absolutely gorgeous he is.
He is a gorgeous man.
And they kind of like normed him up a bit in the film.
Oh, really?
Pretty successfully, I think. But when you see like a red carpet interview, it's kind of staggering.
Really?
Yeah.
I will look those up secretly later.
Definitely.
But Todd Haynes is back. Movies are back.
Yes. Yes. Todd Haynes is back. Back in the news. Thank God.
Yeah. So how you been?
I've been good. Yep. Watching a lot of the usual holiday fare, which for me is the Lord of the Rings extended edition on Hulu.
I see our guest nodding along. I shouldn't admit that I haven't finished that, right?
You shouldn't admit that. Well, it's fine to admit it. That's the first step of addressing the problem, as I think you know. But
I've seen the first two. Hey, that's like 2/3 of the way.
The second one is the best.
All right. Then I've seen it. Yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time, probably.
Really? I did not know this part of you at all.
Yeah, and if you were watching them with me, you'd have to like suffer through me whispering every 10 seconds, this is an additional scene. This is a deleted scene.
I would happily sit through that with that addition.
That's Helm's Deep. Yeah, I'm totally into the movies at least.
Would pay for the commentary track. Would pay.
Yeah.
If you don't have a Patreon, fucking get that.
I was about to say platinum Patreon tier. Yeah.
Yes.
It's my full commentary. The Lord of the Rings extended edition, all 36 hours.
I will not waste our pod time on this, but I want to hear more someday. I had no idea that you even liked, let alone loved, and holiday tradition those. That's great.
Since college, probably, I find it really soothing. And I just think in terms of like film adaptations, they are incredible, like unparalleled in terms of just the world building and the details. And even the stuff that looks shitty now is still totally authentic to the vision that Peter Jackson had. And I think he's the bomb.
Well, I would agree with that last statement for sure.
Come on our pod, Peter Jackson.
I do the boring It's a Wonderful Life because it's my favorite movie of all time. So,
oh, it's a classic for a reason.
It is. Yeah, I'm going to see it. Try to do big screen every 2 or 3 years on it. So this is a big screen here. So hopefully going to see it in a week or so.
Nice.
We have other matters to attend to.
We certainly do.
For Christmas.
Yeah.
With a movie that is basically like It's a Wonderful Life, only not at all.
Actually, yes.
There's a little bit. There's a little bit of Christmas whimsy.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. We should introduce our guest who did sneak on there. And for anybody who listens to podcasts in any way related to film, you probably spotted the voice.
instant recognition.
Yeah, but we will go ahead and pretend like we are going to slow roll the reveal out anyway. Well, maybe not. Joining us today is Blake Howard. Blake is a writer, a film critic, a podcast host, and the producer behind One Heat Minute Productions, which includes shows One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Increment Vice, All the President's Minutes, Miami Nice, Josie and the Podcats, Zodiac Chronicle, Too Much Movie, Podcaster and Commander, and Pod Thomas Anderson, and a Muppet series currently with Ethan Warren, who many of you would know as well, and probably 700 to 800 other projects that are percolating in his brain and or in various stages of editing. Endorsed and featuring legendary filmmaker Michael Mann, One Heat Minute was named by New York Magazine and Vulture as one of 100 great podcasts to listen to and nominated for an Australian Podcast Award. Blake is a Rotten Tomatoes approved film critic with bylines at Empire Magazine, SBS Movies, Meg Visages, Dark Horizons, Film Inc., and many more. He is also, by far and by everyone's agreement, the easiest person to talk to on the planet. One of the best podcasters around by a mile. We're so excited to finally have him on the show with us. Welcome, Mr. Howard.
Oh, man. There are so many shows. It almost makes you sick.
Yeah. Hey, and I just had to read them. You got to actually make them.
I know. Such a pleasure to be on the show with you guys. I love Brightwell. You are my absolute favorites, both of you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Both of you.
And we love you.
Are so great. I love you. I love all of your whole team. They're like a second family. I feel like, you know how you say like they're sister cities in different, you know, like I feel like.
Absolutely. You are definitely our sister city.
Yeah, I feel like sister city. I feel like there's a kinship and I think, you know, we just recognize that we both operate from an angle of love. And like obsession.
Totally. Yeah.
And so we kind of just saw each other across the room, much like I was just like, oh my God, I would happily eat delicious treats that feature on Veronica's Instagram and also listen to her Lord of the Rings chat because that's me. That is a hot. And can we just say, speaking of fandom, Lord of the Rings fandom, undefeated. Like the greatest fandom that exists. Forget your Star Wars and Marvel.
Totally.
Keep it. Okay. Lord of the Rings, the best fandom. And, you know.
It's so true. So pure.
So pure, so silly, so wonderful. But yeah, look, I'm really thrilled to be here. I love you guys so much. So it's so nice to be here for Cruisemas.
Cruisemas.
The third annual edition of Cruisemas. Let's reveal that Cruisemas title.
Absolutely.
We went with the iconic Christmas movies, the way the whole series started, of course, Eyes Wide Shut. Last year, we went with Vanilla Sky because obviously that's the number two Tom Cruise movie of all time. And then we turned it over to Blake because there are so many Tom Cruise movies and we wanted to talk about something he wanted to. And our only rule was we were not allowed to in any way put heat into it in any way. So there'll be no heat mentions. This is the last time heat will come up today. Blake, why don't you say what movie we're going to be talking about today?
Oh.
The original title, if you can.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. So this is a special one. It's Doug Liman's 2014 movie, Edge of Tomorrow, which now goes by Live, Die, Repeat, or All You Need Is Kill if it's adapted. And I think there are fan posters and art out there. But how I saw it in Australia originally 10 years ago, Edge of Tomorrow.
And did you see it in Australia 10 years ago?
Oh, you betcha.
Like in the theater?
Yes, 110%. I was right there. I love Tom Cruise. I looked at my Letterboxd stats and it's disgustingly weighted to Tom Cruise. It's like Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning 3 times. Mission Impossible Fallout 6 times. Jack Reacher 3 times.
Yeah.
Like Mission Impossible Rogue Nation 3 times. Like I love Tom Cruise. He's one of my favorite movie stars, especially in the carousel of, you know, I'm a big physical media head, but there are very many nights where you just like, you've had enough and you're laying on the couch and you're looking at the carousel of any variety of streamers. And it's like garbage, garbage, garbage. Ooh, Edge of Tomorrow. And honestly, my wife has said again about this movie 15 times. I'm like, yes, again, because what else do you want me to watch? I don't want to watch, what's that, Dharma? I don't want to watch Dharma. I don't want to watch some, no, that's not who I am. I'm watching Edge of Tomorrow again. And if it's Emily Blunt's triceps again, so be it.
So be it.
That was actually an alternate title as well.
Live, Die, Emily Blunt's triceps. The new title of this
repeat.
Movie.
Repeat
on that.
Repeat. On repeat.
So yeah, no, I adore this movie. I've watched it so many times. I've watched it 3 times this year. Chad, when you were saying you recently watched it, I was like, do I watch it again? No, I'm good. I'm ready. The sword is sharp to talk about this one. I'm ready.
Cool.
Beautiful.
All right, this is going to be fun.
All right, let's jog listener memories. If you have not seen the film 14 times or just not recently, we'll say. I'll just be referring to it as Edge of Tomorrow because that's how I saw it too.
Me too.
In Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise is Major William or Bill Cage. This is the 2014 adaptation of the Japanese novel All You Need Is Kill. In a dystopian future under alien siege, Cage is U.S. military PR, essentially, deployed to London to propagandize a critical invasion in like a long-standing war. That's a losing war, essentially. Except that General Brigham, played frighteningly by Brendan Gleeson, wants to send him to the front to manage morale, like face-to-face. He is not a soldier. This is terrible news. In combat, Cage contracts the otherworldly ability to survive death and loop time, effectively Groundhog Daying the landing operation over and over until he ends up collabing with fellow soldier Rita Ratasky, played by Emily Blunt, and risks it all ultimately to save the world. And the girl. That's all you need.
All you need.
And Emily Blunt is in this, to call back a year and a half ago podcast joke. From Looper? Was it Looper?
From Looper, another time loop movie with Emily Blunt. What is she doing?
She's time looping, man. That's her thing.
Looper, the best Terminator sequel that wasn't a Terminator sequel, as far as I'm concerned.
Totally.
It literally goes Terminator, Terminator 2, Looper, all the rest.
Wow.
See ya.
Yeah, totally.
I sense a podcast series coming on.
No, you don't.
Absolutely not.
Not for that one. I mean, there's just too many, Chad. There's too many.
Too many movies.
There's too many ideas. There's too many great movies.
I think this premise of like sifting through a bunch of junk in a streaming landscape and landing on this nugget of gold with Edge of Tomorrow is actually so insightful, because this is like in so many ways just like a blockbuster movie, an action movie. We among us don't think that those genres, of course, are like mutually exclusive to quality and intellect. But I mean, how do you think this movie like surpasses its format, if it does at all?
Oh, no, I think it absolutely surpasses it. I think what it has is it has an amazing like establishing setup. It also has this ability that sometimes you like in rewatchable movies, like once you've seen it, it's the old thing of like a cable thing, or you see it on free-to-air television. It's like if you popped in and you just hear like, "Wake up, maggot," and it's like Bill Cage, like, you're like, "Oh shit, like Edge of Tomorrow, like stop everything, let's go." Like, it has an amazing premise. It's Doug Liman is a really famed director for just having a beautiful command of blockbusters and having really tactile.
Absolutely.
Everything really feels, the production value is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And the story sets the scene. It does just enough. It's one of those perfect calibrations, and you can see the Chris McQuarrie of it all. It's just calibrating. Mm-hmm. This is exactly the right amount of information you need to know. Absolutely everything you need to know to start this story. And then once you do it, they take the exact requisite amount of time. And then once you're in it, it is just so deeply satisfying, because it's that almost like weird thing. Like my kids do it now. Like they'll watch YouTube Kids and watch other kids playing video games. It's the Twitch of it all. It's like, oh, I can watch the like figuring it out, the tactile, someone troubleshooting, figuring out problems. And then the dance, like one of my favorite moments is when he knows Rita Vitasky and they are mapping out the way through the invasion, the beach landing. Okay, so we've got to step right and then we duck under here and then there's a mimic here and then we do this. I don't know. It has all these great qualities, but it also has like the right amount of pathos around how torturous it must be to fall in love with the perfect woman over and again every day and watch her die every day and you fail every day and have to repeat these steps over and over again. I don't know. It's like these weird, strange segments of your brain that are activated of like this constant repetition and perfection, but also this constant failure. And I think it has such a relatability of like, I get so many chances, but I'm still going to mess it up 100 times to get there. And so it just is great.
Yeah.
It's a Cruise performance that is so deeply underrated, because he is truly an everyman. He kind of tricks us, even though we know it's Tom Cruise, he tricks us into allowing us to believe that he's an everyman. And then once he escalates and escalates and escalates, and especially in some moments where he's completely unhinged, where he's like, "I don't need a helmet." You're like, "Oh God, this is so good." Like, it's so satisfying. So you just watch it and you're like, this is excellent. It just, I don't know, it just sings to me on such a profound level. And I love it so much, so much.
Hearing you talk about the pathos of it, I feel like yeah, it really is a little bit that movie About Time.
Yes.
And a little bit like The Notebook.
Yeah.
Like all these movies where like Amnesia. And no, totally, right? Because isn't at the end of The Notebook, he's like trying to tell her the story of their love story and she like almost gets it, but then her like dementia kicks back in and he's like, oh, maybe next time. Like,
it's been really a while since I've seen that.
A double feature for the ages, by the way.
I think so.
Him and one for her, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
See, these ideas just spill out. It's awesome.
But there is like that whole amnesia, you know, limited chances, one chance, that is so amenable to not only science fiction, but romance too. And it's so perfect to me that we get the dual plot line in this movie, even though that is something that at least some critics and viewers were displeased with and thought was like gratuitous to the plot, the addition of this kind of Bill and Rita forced love story amid the like more global plot of like alien defeat.
And to all those people, I would say this. What's wrong with you? Who hurt you?
Yeah, grow up.
How could you not fall in love with Emily Blunt? She's the hottest, most charming person maybe ever. And every day you look at her and also she yells at you, which I'm really down for.
Yeah. Same.
I think this is a safe space to share that.
I'm so
down to be like her yelling at me all day. I'm like, yes, ma'am. You betcha. Yes.
Yes. I have messed up.
Yeah, I have.
I'm a bad person.
Chad,
a new layer to these training montages that surely Doug Liman was aware of and maximizing.
Hey, I mean, there is that element. I mean, the thing where it's just like a montage of Tom Cruise getting beat up. You're like, yeah, there is a.
Yeah.
This is wish fulfillment for some segment of the population. Just to watch Tom Cruise just die over and over and over and over.
Sure.
Yeah. Not for me. I was sad every time.
Sad every time too. And I Chad, you just killed me. I may actually be in such a silly mood after that. I'm not going to be able to function. Yeah, I just think it's such a satisfying movie. And also, I think the movie doesn't indulge it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It does just the right amount of stuff with it. And
keeps moving.
That scene where they get to the farmhouse and you feel like it's the first time you're ever seeing them get there. And the beautiful revelations of this movie, I know it's like a little under 10 years old, so there's going to obviously be spoilers that we're talking about here, but it's just this moment where pours her a cup of coffee and then he remembers that she has sugar. And I'm just like, oh my God, that is so tragic.
Oh, three sugars.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Three.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that's why I go back to this movie so many times. It's not just the unbelievable production value of that incredible like D-Day landing / alien invasion. It's those little small moments that make everything so sublime.
Totally. I was really taken with that farmhouse moment and that how that works as a kind of hinge for the plot of the film in this most recent rewatch, which was like this morning for me too. And it also really occurred to me that like just in terms of the plotting and like the order of events, it's really a montage. I mean, this movie is like montage. Yeah. Definitely for those of us who like to see time condensed.
Rocky III, hold my beer, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Totally. It's a masterclass. But it's really when he keeps seeing her die, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially in the initial sort of encounter they have with the aliens on the beach when everybody kind of drops down. It's that experience and that repetition that leads him to sort of give us the reaction shot when he sees her once again in the training facility and she's like, do I have something on my face? And I found that extremely moving, that it's not even that they're finding out they have these sort of compatible personalities or they happen to be the only man and woman in the movie, which it often feels like they are, but like the experience of seeing someone die like 300 times, as she says that she does with her sort of like former whatever Hendrix. It's so, so sad.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
If you allow yourself to be engaged in the movie in that way, it is really sad. But it's also like, that's what's so cute about it is because she's like, do I have something on my face? And she's her at that moment. Like the way that it's calibrated, she's her at that moment. And I think also they've made a couple of great choices with this, a bit of a Macquarieism of like, does Tom Cruise get the girl? Does he kiss the girl at the end? Is it part of the whole thing to kiss the girl? And when Emily Blunt kisses Tom in this movie, not as their like a final crescendo, but it's like just before orchestrates her own demise to save him so he can kill the Omega. One of the takes, she grabbed him and kissed him. because that in that moment was the thing to do. It feels so spontaneous because it's not expected. Mm-hmm. It's not orchestrated for this big, you know, swelling music and big kiss. And oh, yes, the guy gets the girl just before he saves the world, because ultimately we don't know what the hell's going to happen in the context of the movie at that time.
Yeah.
She just grabs him and kisses him. It's like, now, this is now. This is the one time that this is now, and I'm going to kiss you. I mean, I
so inappropriate.
Workplace relationships. Oh, no.
Workplace relationship.
So, yeah, it's just one of those things where I'm just a sucker. I'm a sucker for that kind of romance. We're about to die. We have seconds. But the one thing that I have to do is I'm going to grab you and I'm going to kiss you.
Yeah.
And maybe underneath the exterior of talking exclusively masculine texts, I'm just a gigantic softy.
Well, you know all those movies are just romantic melodramas anyway. Yeah,
you betcha.
So
you betcha. Mm-hmm. I'm happy.
Yeah, they're just Trojan horsing in all those soft feelings.
And we'll just start continuing to talk about it and people will start to be aware that they're just our stories.
Yeah.
Just guys being dudes, being in love.
I mean, I was just thinking of this as like an anti-Christopher Nolan approach. I mean, they don't try to explain how he's like, oh, I got some weird alien blood on my face. Now I can loop through time. And then we move on. We're like, yeah, okay, cool.
That's I love that too.
Perfect.
I don't need to know more than that.
Perfect.
It's like perfect. And Christopher Nolan will be like, and then the physics of the cosmos and this does that. And it's like,
no.
Suspension of disbelief is really easy as long as you just rush through it and don't make an egregious mistake. He got a little blood on his face. Now he loops through time. I mean, come on. Oldest story there is.
Perfect calibration.
Yeah. Right?
Why are we belaboring this point? Doesn't need to happen. Just
I don't care. I don't care if it's real. I'm in. I get you. Let's go.
Yeah. I care so much less as I get older. I'm just like, yeah, let's go. Let's get on with it. We're seeing this. Let's go. This movie has that in spades. It's like, let's go.
Oh, it's so propulsive.
Let's go.
And it doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every month on Bright Wall Dark Room, we belly up with critics, artists, and contributors to speak from the heart about film, which got us thinking, what if we had a space like that every day of the week? A space where artists can go off script on love for their craft.
Introducing Gallery, a new cinema club built by today's most celebrated filmmakers. Helmed by Indian Paintbrush, the folks who brought you the Grand Budapest Hotel and the Asteroid City, Gallery combines personal film collections, thoughtful essays, and live experiences into a single destination. Built by artists as a response and alternative to binge culture, Gallery is not a streaming service. It's all human, no algorithm. A communal cinema experience that celebrates the nuances so often missing in today's industry. And Brightwall Dark Room listeners are invited to receive early access before its official public launch.
Gallery is shaped by many filmmakers that we love here at Brightwall Dark Room, including Mike Mills, Karen Kusama, Ed Lachman, Taylor Russell, Ethan Hawke, and Maggie Gyllenhaal. Members will enjoy access to these artists' hand-picked film libraries, as well as original videos, audio stories, in-depth articles, and exclusive live events. Because, like Brightwall Dark Room, Gallery is a community that believes movies are better experienced together.
To join the club, go to www.join.gallery.com/BWDR. That's GALERIE.com/BWDR.
In terms of the what should I put on the streaming stuff, let's put on this. The thing is, you can put it on from once you've seen it, any point, and just watch from there. And it's just hop on the train and the train takes you to the end. And it's every time it works. It's very well constructed to just be really rewatchable.
And that one aisle, my son starts, Dad, go to the aisle. Like that's what he says when we're on. And it's the streaming services. No, not that aisle.
Oh, okay.
The other aisle, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To look,
we call them rows.
So he's like, that aisle, Dad, go to that aisle. Okay. So, but that aisle, which I've now just adopted in our house, the aisle that says,
that's so great,
continue watching. Like if you've only half watched it, you're exactly right, Chad. It's that exact point of like, oh, cool. Yeah, I've still got an hour. This is sweet. I'm on the beach or I'm about to be. You know, this is great. Oh, no, like, oh, we're here. So, you know, if I know that I'm like an hour and a bit into the movie, oh, good. That might be near the farmhouse, which means that then there gets to be the great next segment, which is them trying to get themselves back to Brendan Gleeson's character. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like whatever section it is, extremely happy to put it on at any time. And yeah, like, you know, when my family go away on holidays, it's Australian summer. I think it's probably more apt for Australians to watch Die Hard in summer because like it's like an LA Christmas because there's no snow. So I think it's probably more apt, but like around summer, I'll just find myself, I'll take a bunch of Blu-rays and I'll watch stuff because it's always later in the evening. We're always having a few drinks. The kids are asleep. You know, it's been a big day of activity. And I tell you, Edge of Tomorrow is going to be in the batch of Blu-rays that I take down to our holiday spot because one night I'll be like, yeah, man, I'm three beers in. Edge of Tomorrow is happening. And Edge of Tomorrow is happening. I'm going to pour something stiff. And
it is a good three beers.
Yeah, we are in.
Sure.
We are in for this. So, yeah, I think no matter where you watch it, I find it extremely rewarding. And I think the rewatchability, I know it's sort of silly to say because it's a movie that is inherently about repetition. I just think the repetition of watching this movie again and again has only made people go, actually, this is amazing. Everything is so great. Mm-hmm. I think it sometimes overwhelms you with the scale, overwhelms you with the tone and all those things. But then there's a certain point where you're like, oh, actually, I can start to see the component parts of how all this structurally is perfect. And then those structuralists, you know, one of my favorite other film critics, Nell Minow, who's an editor at RogerEbert.com. Nell's wonderful. And she's like, Blake, I'm a structuralist. And so she loves the perfection of things corresponding and mounting to mean things from scene to scene. So if you're not familiar with that term and the concept of film criticism, it basically means that every scene must not only serve the scene, but serve the next scene. And the next scene, mm-hmm. and everything needs to mount into the crescendo. And I think that's why this movie is getting so much rewatchability and so much more love over time mm-hmm. is that it is structurally perfect. And that might not be necessarily apparent to you, or you might not have a way to articulate it, but you kind of feel like, mm-hmm. oh, this just works. Like every bit of this movie just works.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the Christopher McQuarrie of it all, as you put it, Blake. Mm. Do you know if his first collaboration with Tom Cruise was with Valkyrie? In 2007.
Valkyrie is number one. Yeah. Chris McQuarrie famously is a guy who admitted that he did no meetings. In Hollywood, general meetings are good. And it's also like, I think it's the way that we interact too as like film critics and fans and peers. Like you, it's like, oh, like let's have a general chat and then let's have a general podcast because like this is how we're going to get to know each other. And so he had a general meeting with Tom Cruise around the time of writing Valkyrie, just a general meeting. Mm. And they were talking about making Valkyrie and it had never was conceived to be a thing that they would do together. And then before they both knew it, it was happening and he was the star. And from that moment, McQuarrie has been on every single film that he's been a part of. And there was this weird nexus for people talk about a forgotten movie and probably aptly forgotten. The Tourist.
Not aptly forgotten.
No, you didn't read the show, Doc.
I love The Tourist.
Oh, okay.
I want to talk about The Tourist.
Let's get there soon. But,
and I want to talk about Veronica talking about
it. No, I want to hear Veronica talk about The Tourist because that's the only thing that's going to get me back. All right, just when I thought I was out, she pulled me back in. Like, that's where I am. But no, I would just say The Tourist was a Cruise McQuarrie joint for the longest
time. Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And then that's part of the reason why I don't like The Tourist because I can't imagine it now because Edge of Tomorrow has so many similar bones. But Cruise was attached around that time and then diverged. And then I think at that time they'd finished Valkyrie. Cruise is meant to do The Tourist. He jumps off, basically does this movie or another mission. And they're pretty much from then off to the races. You know, fierce and tight collaborators from the moment they work together because they just have a beautiful harmony in the way that they like to work. So really that was the time. Like Tourists sort of happened and it looked like, you know, we might only get a Valkyrie. But then after that, it's everything else from there.
That's so amazing to know.
Yeah. A Cruise Tourist.
I mean, that's all I want for Christmas because Johnny Depp really is like the blight on the film. I like his performance in the film. I surprise myself by liking his performance. I think he gets McQuarrie's humor because I think The Tourist is quite funny. The Tourist is also, I might have said this on a different pod episode at some point, but the thing I love about The Tourist, aside from Angelina Jolie, who I think is, like Tom Cruise, a total movie star and like the likes of which are not really in circulation any longer. And her glamour is so explicit in that movie. And the film creates this world in which people recognize that, which I just find so refreshing. Yeah. So like, unlike something like Salt, which I do actually like quite a bit, where everyone's just like, yeah, she just works here. Like that woman works here.
Oh, it's one where she's a reporter too. That's really bad.
Sure.
In Seattle. Yeah. She's just a reporter. Yeah. Angelina Jolie. Yeah.
That woman's just like, that's her job. She works here. We see her around sometimes.
She's in media.
Has anyone worked anywhere You know what I mean? Like if you if there was a woman that was that years. Hot in your office, no one would be able everyone would just be like
no.
Men and women. Wouldn't matter. Like
they'd say you look a lot like Angelina Jolie.
It'd just be like, it's annoying how hot she like she'd just walk into a room and the room would stop and you'd be like
deadlines would not be met. Lawsuits would be filed.
Human resources immediately.
HR explosion. Chaos. But in the Taurus, it's like we get to see all these funny like plot moments happen because people are distracted by how hot she is. And I just think that's hilarious. Yes. And McCrory like gets something about celebrity, I think. And I think that that's part of his collab with Cruz being so fruitful is he sort of gets Cruz as like his humor, his fame, his persona. You know, we even see this in this kind of early like collaboration because in Edge of Tomorrow, like we get to see Tom Cruise becoming Tom Cruise as Cage sort of trains for the role and reveals that he's good at running and, you know, gets more dexterous in the technology and the suit.
Jerry Maguire goes to war.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire goes to war, 100%. McCrory gets it. He just like understands what to do, I think, with these mega celebrities who are would be otherwise just really alienating in their sort of like magnitude. I love that about his stuff.
It's hard. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point about how he seems to work with star wattage better than most people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah, if you go too far the other way, it overwhelms the film. And if you go too far the other way, it doesn't work because we already bring all that association on our own. So if the director's not putting it in there, feels like something's off.
Yeah, it feels like some kind of like bad joke or something.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing that I was reminded of when you're saying that McCrory gets him and their initial kind of vibing, he also gets that thing I brought up earlier, which was obviously somewhat of a joke, but true, is that there is a desire to see people like Tom Cruise on screen just biff it over and over and over. And he talks in the Mission Impossible, the Dead Reckoning one, when I was watching some of the Paramount extra footage, he talks about like, I come up with these stunts to like, put the most famous guy on the planet in these really perilous situations, knowing that he's going to really want to do them. And we're all going to be on set wondering if Tom Cruise is going to like die that day. And we all freak out. But so there is that part of his psyche that gets like, no, this is something audiences like to see specifically him in some kind of peril or danger. And then, of course, survive. As long as you're a decent person, you want to see him survive that as well.
There's a great Greg Tarzan Davis, who a lot of people saw for the very first time in Top Gun Maverick as one of the pilots. There's a great behind-the-scenes shot of his reaction to Tom Cruise flying off the ramp before he base jumps. And he just he just does what all humans, I think, would do. He just laughs because he doesn't know what to do. He just scream laughs. He's like, oh!
It breaks your brain.
He's just like, what am I doing here in a mountain in Norway? I just watched the most famous actor in the world fly off. He's like, he just can't even talk. Yeah. It's so funny and so relatable.
And then we do that for like 500 more times.
Yeah, we'll do it a few more times. It's so relatable because he's like, I don't even have a reaction to this. But yeah, I think you're right. It's it's spot on.
McQuarrie is like the Cruise whisperer in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Yeah. But Doug Liman is too.
Yes.
Doug Liman is a movie star whisperer in general because he did, I mean, Born Identity, he did the same thing with Matt. Like Matt Damon, action star, doesn't exist without Doug Liman, in my opinion. No. Like who's going to buy that? But he figured out a way to make it work by just totally turning off all the emotion in star wattage. Again, working with that star persona in a way that in that way is very counter to it and doesn't lean into any of it. But I mean, that I loved that. I loved that movie. And I thought, as much as I liked the rest of them, you know, and would watch them if they came on, I think that the first one is just so strong.
It is.
Totally agree. And similar ingredients, as you're pointing out, like with a kind of a love story, the action plot. I mean, it's so like classical Hollywood storytelling.
A guy with kind of amnesia-ish stuff.
Yeah. A guy can't remember anything. But you're right. He's so good at kind of fine-tuning and refining charisma on screen and sort of distilling it to like digestible amounts so that you can appreciate it. But it's not necessarily like overwhelming. And you're not thinking too much that this is a movie, even when there's so much kind of fantastic stuff going on that would like counteract our sense of reality.
And you don't need to know. I mean, there's like no homework required. Like normally I do a lot of looking stuff up and I was like, yeah, I feel like I could just talk about this one. I don't feel like you have to know everything about it for any of it to work.
The only thing that I have found out recently, because I, you know, love everything that Cruise does and McQuarrie, so I'm very into the research and into listening to great shows like Light the Fuse with my Two Faves, Charles and Drew, and those things. So you really pore over those. You can get a great oral history of a lot of these projects. But the thing I love learning the most about it is how much Emily Blunt was brought into the creative inner circle of this movie. So
I didn't know that.
Doug Liman obviously is the main man. Macquarie comes on set to basically actively rewrite this movie, and he's doing it with Cruise in his lead role, sort of like continuing to whatever he does. It's almost like interrogate whether every element of it is going to continue working. And then Emily Blunt was brought in to that inner circle to be like, you are Rita. This movie is as much about you as it is about Bill. And so she then worked with Macquarie and like they crafted her in collaboration with her. So what that you can sort of tell then exactly as you were saying, Veronica, before about the star wattage. Her star wattage is calibrated to perfection as well because she's actively in all those conversations sort of and Cruise is happy to have her as like a co-collaborator in that sense, and they're just working through the entire movie step by step, this quartet of people going, okay, we're going to grind through and this is how the whole movie is going to work. It's going to hinge on these two performances and we're just going to keep working at it and working at it, working at it and refining it. And so then at the end, and that's why Emily Blunt has like nothing but these, you know, I think a lot of Cruise co-stars say this, but like nothing but like amazing praise and fond memories.
Oh my God, his co-stars love him.
Because they're like, he's like, he brought me in. I wasn't the big dog. He brought me into that inner circle. We crafted that movie together with Macquarie and Liman to make it exactly and precisely what we both wanted out of both those characters and work together. And nothing that we didn't both, you know, the chorus was all in agreement with went into that movie. And so I think that that's huge. And I've loved hearing about that going forward because I'm like, yeah, her performance is amazing. It's one of the best action, female action performances ever. And she's, you know, she started out as the snarky office hilarious like bitch in Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, Devil Wears Prada.
That's when everyone sort of she exploded and everyone saw her for the first time. And you're like, man, she can do anything.
Yeah.
All the way up to Oppenheimer. She can do anything.
That is the feeling you get from her in this performance. And it's funny that we're talking about Looper because it's that same kind of like steeliness that she brings out in both of these roles. And I love to see it because it's not necessarily like transforming her. It's not the kind of story of like when you have a male movie star who does like an incredible physical transformation like Chris Pratt or something. Like, I wish I could transmit my facial expression saying Chris Pratt into the podcast.
We felt it.
Yeah. Can you hear the derision? But I recently watched one of those Jurassic movies on an airplane.
Oh,
and I was
Lord.
Like, I cannot even believe what I'm looking at right now. But anyway.
You're just like, I need some alien blood on my face and I need this plane to go down so I can make a decision to not watch one of the Jurassic World movies.
Yeah, I got to start over. Yeah.
And Veronica's big into plane movies. She's an expert in that area. So
I am. In fact, I think I actually watched Edge of Tomorrow for the first time on a plane, which I do think is the best way to encounter Tom Cruise films. And if you're flying Aer Lingus this holiday season, you will notice that there is like a whole aisle, if you will, of Tom Cruise films to choose from.
Oh, wow.
They've like worked that in. It's like romance, holiday, Tom Cruise. You know, the Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity.
I mean, you know, the Irish get it. But yeah. Anyway, I totally agree. I think that Liman sort of choreographing it so that what we keep seeing of her over and over, which is a kind of like moment of erotic contemplation, sure, but is also this kind of just great economic image that demonstrates that she's a badass and she's really tough, but it's believable. You know, is this kind of like chaturanga moment that it looks like she's kind of floating, but she's actually just in a low push-up. And I mean, yeah, the triceps, the delts.
Is it a push-up? I'm trying to figure out what that move is. It's like a weird dance yoga push-up move.
It is the bottom of a yoga push-up.
Okay.
Yes. Elbows at 90 degrees.
Interesting.
Elbows at 90 degrees, feet up.
Perfect form.
Perfect form. And then she dips her feet down and comes back up into an upward dog.
Upward facing dog. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've all watched that part more than once. Okay. Whenever it's continue watching, it's just right there.
This show, Nelly, went off the rails. Did you feel it, everyone listening? Did you feel the... I hope that the great producer of this show leaves that pregnant pause in where the plane could fly through the pause.
Yeah. Yeah, leave the drool hitting the mic in the final cut, Eli. It's amazing.
But did anyone else get like slight like Linda Hamilton T2 vibes from that?
Yeah, the arms.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you have arms like that, I feel like it's giving.
Got to go back to Mother on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Linda Hamilton, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Every one of the girls who trains to be an action movie star is like Sylvester Stallone in Rocky IV, but instead of a mirror that has Drago, it's a picture of Linda Hamilton. They just are looking.
Yes.
That's what they are chasing when they're doing the hill runs in the snow and all that sort of stuff. They're just chasing Linda Hamilton doing chin-ups in T2 on a bed. And you're like,
totally.
Hell yes. Yeah, the greatest.
The greatest.
Another perfect movie.
It is a perfect movie.
Yeah, T2. Yeah. The best.
Yeah. I want to shout out another one of the collaborators that I think is kind of funny and weird with this movie.
You're excited about this. Yeah.
We're just hitting a lot of stuff in my wheelhouse. This film was scored by Christoph Beck, who did Frozen.
He wrote that, yeah.
But more importantly, wrote some of the most incredible love themes for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the television show.
Yes.
And if you were me, if you're born in 1984, you have bawled your eyes out listening to Christoph Beck's The Sacrifice, or I think there's one called Close Your Eyes, which is like the Buffy Angel love theme.
Yeah.
These like simple themes are so like, I've been programmed by them basically. So shout out Christoph Beck. The music here too, I think, does a lot for those moments where the montages kind of slow down and we have this like encroaching sobriety about the emotional stakes of what's going on in the film. Beck is pulling it off beautifully.
Yeah.
I will reveal it here.
Ooh, here we go.
I am a gigantic Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan.
Gigantic.
I would watch it with my sister. It was every single Tuesday in Australia, like 8:30, 9:30 p.m. I think it was in the evenings when it used to come out, you know, sort of around the same time as the States as the show grew in popularity. And I am deeply familiar with like all of the Buffy and then the Angelverse, etc. But that, yeah, Christoph Beck, that's how I knew Christoph Beck.
Just an exclusive?
That's how I knew Christoph Beck. I'm like, yeah, he's a Buffy guy. Like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
That's who he is. And so when you see him, I'm like, oh, Christoph Beck from Buffy. Awesome. So, yeah, huge fan, and I completely agree. He's a terrific practitioner. And, like, starting out in TV and now in doing, like, gigantic movies, it's a huge.
Totally.
It's huge.
He must still be working, right?
Oh, like of doing course, yeah.
I mean, I wasn't familiar with him until I saw Veronica note him on the dock, and I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, man.
I'm usually, like, decent at keeping up with film composers, but yeah, I had not heard that name. Also, while you're looking, Emily Blunt's brother is in this, by the way.
Really?
Oh, who is he?
He plays, well, it's not quite as big of a role as hers. It's Guy on the Tarmac.
Good for her. So,
yeah, get him in.
But his IMDb is a little slim, but he's in there.
So, there's 1,700 guys on that fake tarmac in like...
Well, and
one of them is her brother.
Where's Waldo, you know?
Nice Easter egg.
He has an unbelievable resume. So many things. Like he traverses like literally every genre. So if you're just going backwards, he's in the superheroes with Marvel and DC, Shazam, Ant-Man. He did the Hawkeye TV show. He did Free Guy, WandaVision, which is actually a really terrific score. He did Frozen 2, which was a monster. He did American Made, which is the other Cruise Lyman collaboration.
Yeah.
I'm just going down. Yeah, so then he does Edge of Tomorrow. And then if you go back, he did Frozen. That was his other big one. But in between then...
Well, what's that about?
Yeah, exactly. he's just all over the shop. Percy Jackson, Lightning Thief, Death at a Funeral, Red... And then you're literally, he's working like 4 to 5, sometimes 6 projects a year. Like he's absolutely incredible, incredible career.
I'm going to try to drop at least one link in the show notes to one of these like Buffy themes because
the
comments are so pure. It's just all these people like me, like Blake, who are just like crying and remembering being young and still as raw to it now as you once were. And if you were there, you get it. Like those themes are so, so, so sad and similar in terms of like pulling out a lot of deep emotion from an otherwise very action oriented kind of context. Stellar stuff. Christoph Beck, come on the podcast.
7 months ago, someone was still saying, I remember this score like it was yesterday. It's just like, I'm in the comments already. It's so good.
They're amazing. It's the one place you should read the comments.
I'm 36 now, but it takes me back to being 17 and rushing home from college in order to catch Buffy on TV. So good. Great.
Talk about a time machine.
What a time machine.
Yeah. Should we do last call?
Yeah.
Great.
I have no idea where Blake's going on this one.
I know. We end every episode asking our guests to share a quick staff recommendation based on your physical media visible in the frame. I assume you understand what we mean by that. So what would you rec to the video store customers?
Ooh, is this an Edge of Tomorrow themed recommendation, a cruise themed one, or just...
It's really a Blake themed one.
Okay. Yeah, something Blake wants to plug, because you don't get much chance to talk on mic, I know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go completely off the map. It is something I have talked about this year, but it only because it was the first time. I would love the listeners of the BWDR pod to go and seek out the movie Hit that stars Billy Dee Williams.
What? I haven't heard of that.
So it's a 1973 movie. So it's a federal agent. His daughter dies of a heroin overdose, and he starts to go and like discover the drug conspiracy that allowed her to be supplied drugs. It's made by Sid Fury. It's got like French Connection vibes, and it stars Richard Pryor as well. It's a movie about a crew that gets together to like take down this big drug operation. And I saw it earlier this year just as part of this amazing Sid Fury box set from an Australian boutique Blu-ray label called Imprint Films. And I was just like poring over them. I still haven't finished all of them in the box set. My partner, Alexi Toliopoulos, and I, who work on that show together, we sort of like split it up. Anyway, Hit was on his list to cover, as you know, let's get inside baseball here with podcasts. All right, he was on his list. and he texted me at like 11 p.m. one night and said, "Oh my God, you have to watch Hit." And I was like, "Whoa, okay, it's one of those late night texts, must be important." And I watched it, and it was absolutely sensational. So it is hard to get hands on. I believe anyone who's listening to this can ship it in as part of the Sid Fury box set. But if you can just buy it online, I'm not sure what it is, because I know in Oz it's hard to gauge, because in the States you guys have got kind of better libraries of stuff you can access. But Hit, an absolutely incredible film, and has this older couple who are part of the, if you like, gang of people crew that has the most sort of tragic and beautiful love story, Veronica, that I think you would absolutely go berserk over. It's so good. And so, yeah, that's my big...
Wow, the cast. My goodness.
The cast is amazing.
Gwynne Wells, Richard Pryor, yeah. That's
Sid Melton. There's nothing like it. So I haven't seen anything like it. It's so off the beaten track.
Wow.
Recently this year, that is like my complete... If you have not seen it, it's in my top two or three recommendations for this year, just of things that I saw. And I'm like, I don't know how more people haven't seen this. And it's just so great to see like Billy Dee Williams get like a real meaty, awesome kind of Gene Hackman-y, French Connection-y kind of role as the lead. And so, yeah, I just think it's badass. And I think it's really, really excellent. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah. And I would just add for people listening, it's available in America anyway on Amazon Prime Video through some other streaming site called Brown Sugar. And it's also available on YouTube currently for $3.99. So it's out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome.
And in Blake's brain, he will walk you through step by step the entire movie on his Patreon.
No, I won't. There's too many other shows.
One Hit Minute. Come on.
I know. It's right there. It's really right there. I did amuse my co-host Katie Walsh, who's been a guest on your show very much, when I posted our special episode that's coming up, and I called it Ferrari Nice, and she's just like, Ferrari Nice. I'm like, very nice. It's close enough to very if you say it in a really stupid accent. I'm like, so sometimes you have to amuse yourself first and then everyone else later, you know?
I always figure with those titles you're amusing yourself.
Yeah, always.
What's the Master and Commander one again?
Podcaster and Commander. Podcaster and Commander. Yes. That thing writes itself, you know.
Blake, thank you so much for joining us. This has been such a treat.
Oh, you guys are great.
Awesome.
Yeah, it feels like it's overdue. So thank you.
Absolutely it is.
Very overdue.
That's a pleasure.
Thank you for all the wonderful podcasts you put in. I mean, I know you didn't start during the pandemic, but that's when I listened to most of them, because I was in my own Edge of Tomorrow loop with every day being the same. But yeah, lots of good stuff there. You probably could never exhaust that library, even if you tried, and he's only making more each day, so you'll never catch up.
Can I just say also, during the pandemic, we did all the President's Minutes. So we did Increment Vice, which is the great Travis Woods.
That's a very good memory for me.
Yeah, the great Travis Woods, who's a Brightwall alum.
Absolutely.
You know, so did that show. But I think a lot of people talk about One Heat Minute, but I'm so proud of all the President's Minutes, man. I'm really like, that show was recorded in 11 months, and there's like 136 episodes that we did like sometimes more than two a week to make it.
Yeah. And the one I did was like, I felt like 2 or 3 hours of talking.
Yeah,
I was like, there's no guardrails here. We just go.
Yeah, we went. And, you know, I'm so proud of that show, the timing of the show coming out, you know, prior to the US election result and all those sorts of things. And it ends with Jane Alexander. You know, speaking of that time, I think so fondly about having amazing hyper political cinema conversations that I think that a lot of our fans would be proud of. So like sometimes I forget how good that show is. I'm just like, it was such an amazing experience for me to be a part of doing it. And so if people enjoyed it at that time, because there were a lot of shows we were doing at that time, because what else were we doing except sitting inside watching movies? So yeah, I'm really proud of that. But thank you. You know, you guys have been so, your whole team has been so generous to me. So I just want to say thank you, because yeah, I'm such a fan of everything that you guys do.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Blake, where can we find you online?
It's tough.
Yeah. This week, I'm everywhere.
You've started video podcasting too. They're great, by the way. Your producer, that dynamic is hilarious.
Yeah, Brian is such a sweetie pie and so fun.
You just sit there and make fun of him the whole time.
Yeah, well, that's what we do when we're not recording. So he's just one of my dearest friends. So he's super fun. If you go to oneheatminute.com, that literally has links to everything. If you're looking for me personally, it's OneBlakeMinute on like Twitter and because I'm only calling it Twitter. On Twitter and Instagram, that's where I am. And so, yeah, One Heat Minute Productions, if you just type that into any podcast service that you want, there are countless shows that are on there. I think technically it's like 16 seasons of series and miniseries that we've done over the years. Some of them have concluded now. Some of them occasionally get, you know, looped back in. But yeah, there's just so much out there. So yeah, take a listen. And it's not just all me talking. It's now, fortunately, it's some other great co-contributors. Ethan Warren, we've done now. Pod Thomas Anderson and the Great Henson Caper. So that one's concluding. You know, Travis Woods did Increment Vice, which ends with Paul Thomas Anderson, which is amazing. Katie Walsh is one of my favorite human beings in the world. And if you don't listen to Miami Nice,
ours too.
If you don't listen to Miami Nice for Katie, what's wrong with you? Veronica was there for one of the greatest highlights on the show,
truly,
which we would call the checkered flag. Go and listen. There's some great highlights out there.
What a firecracker.
She's the best. And Maria Lewis, who's truly my best friend in the world, a really prodigious and talented author. We did an audio documentary on Josie and the Pussycats called Josie and the Podcats, which is amazing. And Maria met, you know, the filmmakers, met Rachel Lee Cook. Take a listen to that, because proud of that show. It's a banger. So yeah, there's so much on there to listen to for all your tastes.
Beautiful.
Blake, what a dream to have you here. I'm sure it won't be the only time that you're gracing these airwaves. It's been wonderful to break you in here with the Cruisemas.
The best.
It's been wonderful. Thank you. And I know, I think it's a different day where you are. So hello in the future.
You're on the edge of tomorrow, right? Like
I feel like I'm on the edge of tomorrow right now.
This is the edge of tomorrow. I'm in tomorrow. You're on the edge of tomorrow. So
I'm right on the edge. Yeah.
Here we are.
To read this month's issue of Bright Wall Dark Room, visit us at brightwalldarkroom.com. This month's issue is a free-for-all called Dealer's Choice 2.0 with essays on movies from all across the board, running all through the month, and also a surprise podcast, as well as the Cruisemas podcast you're listening to right now. You can also find us on Twitter at BWDR and the BWDR podcast, also in various other social media sites at usually BWDR.
Please subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, rate the podcast, and give us a review.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at Gallery, a new kind of film club. Listeners can sign up at join.gallery.com/BWDR.
Our theme music is composed by Chad Perman. This podcast is produced and edited by Eli Sands.
For the signature bye on this episode, I think you should say live, bye, repeat.
I can't do that.
For the bye? Oh.
I can't do that.
Live, bye, repeat. Bye, repeat. Bye, repeat.
Bye.
Live, bye, repeat. Also, it's nice to see Bill Paxton in that movie. We didn't say that, but I miss him.
Oh, Chad.
Sorry.
So sad.
Merry Christmas!